You ever know anybody that set out on a adventure or a mission that would be help? I'm not wearing the mic. Like starting a class without the mic, things like that. Okay, we'll try this again. Maybe I better start over for the recording, huh? Don't get discouraged. I'm coming. Have you ever personally known of anyone who started on a mission that could have been helpful to them or their family or society and gave up? You personally? Know anybody? Maybe somebody you read about? I know we've got people here who read books. Nobody knows anyone. Okay. Lauren, you're an avid reader. Do you know of any authors that you've read about that maybe started a book or something like that and gave up, didn't finish? You do? Who? You remember? No? Okay. You read about them? Okay. You know, I thought Josh had some good comments as he led us in this song. What if our fathers, the Christians before us, the men and women of the Old Testament and New Testament, particularly those in the New Testament, what if they had gotten discouraged and quit, given up? You think of where we'd be today. There'd be no letters to the seven churches. There'd be no letters to the Ephesian church, the Colossian church, the Corinthian church. They wouldn't be there. And so we are indeed indebted to people who faced afflictions like that and did not let those things discourage them. We're all subject to discouragement. At least I know I am. And I don't want you to start clapping, but I probably wouldn't be preaching if it wasn't for my wife. That may cause you not to like her. But it's because of her encouragement. Sometimes we need a good kick in the behind to get us going. And she's given me that over the years. As well as brethren who've encouraged me in times of discouragement. And so discouragement is not a unique thing to people who are barely on the edges, but people oftentimes who are diligently trying to serve God, but they face obstacles in their lives that can just, if not careful, overwhelm them. And if not cause them to quit, cause them to slow down. We're going to begin with a guy. I wrote about him in the text to you today. He's one of the toughest guys I know. I mean, he's tough. You'd think there ain't nothing going to discourage this guy. And faith, well, he surpasses, I guess, all of us. Deep, deep faith in God. You may know who I'm talking about. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 19. 1 Kings chapter 19. And when I say he's tough, you look back in chapter 18, and you remember there was a conflict between Elijah, this prophet, and the king. Not his neighbor, not his employer, but the king, who has had so much power back then. There's no Congress that he has to pass through. He's the king. If he orders you to be put to death, he can do that. So, finally, you see in chapter 18, of course, Obadiah was concerned about Ahab and what he would do to him. And so, he talked to Elijah about that. And so, Elijah met Ahab. And when he met Ahab, I want you to note verse 17. So, Ahab saw Elijah. Now, if you know that Ahab has the power of a king, life or death. He's unscrupulous. He has no principles, morals, to keep him from killing the innocent. And he doesn't like you anyway. If you met him, how would you talk to him? Would you try to be, be careful and not try to rile him up, that kind of thing? So you see in verse 17, Ahab said to him, "Is this you, you troubler of Israel?" Well, Elijah didn't say, "I'm sorry, Ahab, I don't mean to upset you." No, listen to what he said. He said, "I've not troubled Israel, but you and your father's house have, because you've forsaken the commandments of the Lord and you followed the Baals." Just straight up, right to the king's face. "You're the problem, bud. You've forsaken the Lord." And then he made a challenge. He said, "Now you sent and gathered to me all Israel at Mount Carmel, together with 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the Asherah." That's 850. 850 to one. How many of us would like to face those odds? 850 to one. And so then he put out this test. That you remember that test. I said he's a man of deep faith. For him to even make this kind of a challenge. Suppose this test would have come up. And when they called on their God, we know nothing would have happened. But what would have happened if when he called on his God, nothing would have happened? What would have happened to Elijah? But he was willing to put it to the test. That's faith. Faith, trust in God, sometimes is based on things that we cannot explain mathematically. We don't have necessarily a past event. We just trust God. And that's what Elijah did. And you remember the story how he called fire down. Of course, had the altar soaked in water, called fire down and destroyed the sacrifice. And so... verse 40. Remember I said he's tough? That was tough enough. Stand, say, "Let's have a face off." But then Elijah said, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape." So they seized them. And Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. Not that he personally killed them all. It's metonymy of effect. That's the effect that they were killed. Or the cause is stated, he slew them there. But certainly there were others there that, in fact, you'll see back in the previous verse, when all the people saw it, they said, "The Lord, he is God." So what kind of man would have 850 people killed? That's a tough guy. He's tough to stand against the king. He put it to the test. And so... in chapter 19, Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done. And so note verse 2, Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the God do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the one of them by tomorrow about this time." Jezebel was one wicked woman. You remember what she did with Naboth? Wicked woman. And she said, "I'm going to kill you. I'm going to get you killed." And so, verse 3. He was afraid and arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, left his servant there. He himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and sat down under a juniper tree. Here's this great guy, tough guy, said, "You're the troubler of Israel. Bring your prophets. Let's have a battle. Let's have a test." Had 850 of them killed. But look what it says in verse 4. He requested for himself that he might die. That's not commendable. You know, great people we love and respect sometimes disappoint us. They get discouraged. And this is a disappointing thing in Elijah's life, but... Isn't it interesting the Holy Spirit doesn't pull any punches? He just tells you the way it is. And he has the writer of 1 Kings to tell you about this great man and a weakness he had. He got discouraged, so discouraged. He said, I just soon die, Lord. Now, he didn't contemplate suicide. Job didn't contemplate suicide. Men of faith in the Bible didn't contemplate suicide. It's men who did not have faith in God who contemplated suicide. But he asked God to take his life. And so, notes what he said. It's enough now. You ever say, I've had enough? I can't take it anymore. This is it. Well, you're not the first one. Here's a guy 2,800 years ago who said that. And he was a great guy. And sometimes we may think people that say that just have no faith. This guy had more faith than most of us would have. But he just got discouraged. He's susceptible to it, and we all are. See, I'm enough. It's enough. And so he said, take my life, for I'm not better than my father's. And so God sent an angel. Verse 5 said, rise and eat. God provided for him. You know, we talked this morning about the amazing grace of God. And so this is not in a matter of spiritual salvation, but you see God's grace for this, his servant. And you think, well, God be so disappointed in him, he wouldn't want anything to do with him. That's not the case. God knows our weaknesses. And Christ came to the earth to suffer like we do, so we'd know he knows. If you knew before, but we can know that he knows. And so then, verse 8, he went to Horeb, came to a cave and lodged there. The word of the Lord came to him, said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? God didn't have a GPS. He didn't have somebody, a messenger that came and told him where he was. The same thing with you and me. We hide in our cave, get discouraged, wherever that may be. Our house, whatever. God knows where we're at. And he knows how we feel. He knows how we think. And he said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And so God asked questions not for answers, not because he doesn't know the answer. He asked questions to make people think. And so, like Adam, when he said, where are you, Adam? He knew where he was. The point was, what happened? You know you've done something wrong. He was hiding, you know. Did you eat of the tree? I told you not to eat. He knew he did. To bring it home to his conscience. So God says, what are you doing here? It's to make him think, what are you doing here? And next time we get discouraged, you think about if God was to talk to us. Maybe he'd say, well, what is wrong with you? Why do you feel that way? Why are you hiding in your closet, as it were? Trying to stay away from people. I don't want anything to do with people. I'm disgusted. I'm sick of it. I'm tired. Get disgusted. We don't even want to see people, maybe. And he explains in verse 10. I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. By the way, is that true? That is true. Did he do wrong in looking at himself objectively and realize he had been a zealous servant of God? No. And we won't get to it tonight, I don't think. But that's one of the things that can help us with discouragement, is to be able to at least objectively weigh ourselves. And he knew he had been zealous for God. That's not proudness in a sinful sense. Paul did the same thing. Moses did the same thing. But it's a recognition. I've tried to serve God. I know I have. And he said, the sons of Israel are forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, kill your prophets with the sword. And here's the clincher. I'm the only guy left. He said, I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. There ain't nobody else. Just go ahead and take my life, God. I'm through. And so, God told him what to do in verse 11, and down in verse 13, here he is again. And God told him, said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He asked him again. How patient is our God? He asked him a second time, what are you doing here, man? Had the same response, verse 14. So the Lord said to him, go. He gave him a mission, gave him something to do. And so when we get all down and out and discouraged, is there anything we ought to be doing? Now, we don't have the mission like this, the special mission to anoint Hazael king over Aram. But are there things we ought to be doing instead of feeling sorry for ourselves? He said, go. You remember when Joshua, the battle of Ai, and they lost it. You remember what he did? Who remembers? What did he do? Throw a party? Then he fall on his face, all discouraged. We're going to get whipped out here. What did God tell him? Remember? Get up. There's sin in Israel. You need to do something about it. That's kind of a paraphrase. And so we get all down in the mouth and discouraged. I've been there. Ask my wife. No, don't ask her. I don't want to tell her to tell you. I've been there. And it can happen to any of us. And so God says, go. But then God told him something, verse 18. This is what we need to remember. I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So Elijah said, there's nobody. Nobody's serving you anymore. God says, you're just wrong as you can be, fella. 7,000 is a small number compared to the number in Israel. That's true. But you know what? You get disgusted with the world we live in, the ungodliness, everything's upside down. The TV shows, the news, the schools, the government, everywhere you look. How many do we have here tonight, Wally?
36.
That is, let's see, over four times as many as Noah would have had if he had had a Bible study. Four times. That's just tonight. Yeah, the world's wicked. Well, I'll tell you what. I thank my God to worship with people week after week. We had 60-something probably this morning here, counting the young people and the small children. But still, wouldn't Noah have really liked to have been able, you know, in that over 100 years that he preached, to say, we're going to meet at 5 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning and have 50 people show up? Have people bring their children? Let Noah talk to them about God? And I'm going to get discouraged and quit and say, I've had it? Well, that's what happened with Elijah. And so, you think of another guy, talking about getting discouraged because everybody's sorry. Sometimes we get discouraged because the people that are closest to us are so disappointing. You think of a guy that his whole family disappointed him. Young man. Joseph. When he's 17 years old, how many of his brothers were devoted to serving God? None. And in fact, they were jealous. They wanted to kill him. One brother stopped him. Sold him into a foreign country. So at least he had a daddy that had some faith. Now they sell him into a land where he doesn't know anybody that believes in God there. I don't know if he found anybody. The Bible doesn't tell us. And he goes to work for this guy. And while he appreciates his work ethic, he's not a believer in God like Joseph is. And his wife is cunning and deceitful and lustful. Now he's thrown in jail. How many good, faithful, God-serving people is he going to find there for 2 years? You remember Genesis 39? when all that was happening, the phrase that occurs throughout that chapter, do you recall? What? God was with him. The Lord was with him. He was with him? And let all this happen? Yeah, he's with him. Joseph didn't know it at the time, but he was a key element in God's grace to save his people. He didn't know it. But the indications are he still would not relinquish his faith in God. When the woman tried to invite him to sin with her, he said it'd be a sin against God. And so, you think of your family. Maybe you're the only one in your family to try to serve God. Well, join the crowd. Maybe all the people you work around and work for, none of them care about serving God. Well, maybe you get to meet Joseph someday. He can tell you about that. And so there's Elijah, there's Joseph, there's others. Jeremiah got awfully discouraged. There's so many we could mention. But I talk about the people right here. And one of the things we need to do is learn the people we worship with. Who are these people? And I've talked about this in lesson after lesson, trying to get people. You're sitting on that side. Know something about the people on this side. You're sitting in the front. Learn something about the people in the back. Don't just talk to the same people all the time. We have a tendency to kind of group into our little groups of people that we like. There's nothing wrong with that. We're going to form closer bonds to some Christians because of similarities of interest and those kind of things and ages and so forth. But we're working together in the greatest cause on earth. We need one another. Look at 1 Peter chapter 4. If you're familiar with the first letter that Peter wrote here, you're aware of the fact they're living in troublesome times. You ever been a slave? You read chapter 2 and you'll see verse 18 following. Some of them were slaves. Slaves. Not good masters. Mean, cruel, harsh. You think our government's bad? You look back up in verse 13. They lived under the Roman government. Pretty bad. I mean wicked, wicked rulers. Ungodly. No respect for God or His Word. And then you have here in chapter 3, we've had women here that's faced this. Women who are here, some tonight, has faced this very thing. There are women that Peter wrote to who had men, who husbands that weren't Christians. Boy, does that bring problems. Drinking, cursing, making it difficult on the woman to serve God, all that kind of thing. Well, that's what you had here in verse 1. A woman living with a disobedient husband. And then there may be that the men had wives that way. And he still tells the men to honor his wife as a fellow heir of the grace of life, verse 7. And then later in the chapter, he talks about this business of them living amidst this mistreatment in their society and how to react in attitude and conduct. So that's the society in which they live. When you get to chapter 4, to make everything worse, you know, they had turned their lives around. They used to go partying and drinking and you name it. Whatever they wanted to do, they did. You see that in verse 3 of chapter 4. They pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drinking, carousings, drinking parties, abominable idolatry. Oh, they'd have fun, drink, get drunk, and no telling what else they'd do. They quit it. Their quote-unquote fun. Their Friday night parties are gone. I hear people today talk about that. You can't wait till Friday. Then go party. Go to the bar. Drink. Dance. And so, verse 4, people are surprised. So what do? If they don't live that way anymore, what do they malign you? Who do you think you are? You think you're better than us? Can you imagine what they were saying? Maybe co-workers, maybe their family. And so the context of 1 Peter is one of suffering. They don't enjoy what we've enjoyed. Wally and I often talk, and I've mentioned this in sermons. We have been blessed to live in one of the best generations ever. You know, when Wally and I were born, I was born in 44, so was he. And that was right at the end of World War II. The end of World War II. Our nation after that enjoyed prosperity, freedom. And although there was a Korean War, that was over there, not here. There's the Vietnam War, that was over there, not here. War in Iraq, that was over there, not here. I've never been part of a world war. I've never had to go leave my family, go fight in an army. I'm thankful to God for that. And so we're very blessed. These people were suffering. I mean, they were really suffering. So what does he say in verse 7? The end of all things is near. I don't think he's talking about the end of time. I think what he probably has in view is God's going to bring an end to the Jewish dispensation. They're the ones behind the persecution, even getting Rome involved. And their end is coming in 70 AD. But be that as it may, whatever that may mean, he says, therefore, be of sound judgment. So that means look at things the way they really are. Don't form some misconceptions. That was Elijah's problem, wasn't it? That was Josiah's problem, wasn't it? I mean, Joseph's problem, wasn't it? Be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Don't quit praying. We get in trouble sometimes. That's when we quit praying. We get discouraged. But he said, above all, listen to this. What would you tell somebody that was discouraged about the ungodliness around and how they're treated by their family and friends and co-workers? Look at this, verse 8. Keep fervent in your love for one another. I think there's a song in our book. Maybe Craig, Josh, maybe Keith remember, Make Friends of God's People, something of that nature. You may remember it, Wayne. Make Friends of God's People. Isn't that what he's saying here? Not in those words, but he said, keep fervent in your love for one another. Now, we need one another. And he said, because love covers a multitude of sins. And so you love one another and you see one another's weaknesses. That's going to happen when we're mixed and mingled together. But you know this person is really trying to serve the Lord. You're not looking for something to beat them down with. And he said, be hospitable to one another without complaint. Hospitable. What is that? Just talking to him at the building? You think that's what it is? Go study hospitality in your Bible. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. And we've got brethren here who have exemplified that down through the years. They've had people in their homes. They've come to know people that way. I'm looking at some here tonight. I won't call their names because I don't want to embarrass them. They demonstrate hospitality. But this is not my plan. In the face of suffering and trial and the potential discouragement, he said, be fervent in your love for one another. And then in verse 10, he said, as each one has received, now the word special is in italics, a gift. We all have different levels of gifts. We may not have some of these because some may have been miraculous. But we have different gifts. And what do you do with it? Employ it in serving one another. Maybe you have a gift to encourage. Maybe you have a gift to write a note or a letter. Maybe you have a gift, the gift of gab, to get on the phone and encourage somebody or something else, whatever it may be. Notice he said he mentioned very different things here. Same thing in Romans chapter 12. He mentions various gifts that people have. But be that as it may, to serve one another. And so, there can be a a tremendous encouragement in getting to know one another. And I know my wife and I think about you folks, and we think about people in this audience. For example, there's people here tonight, and there were people here this morning who they're the only ones in their family that serve God. Maybe there are people here tonight that their mate doesn't serve God. In fact, makes it difficult. And you know what? They just keep on serving God. They're here tonight, people that face that kind of thing. I was blessed. I grew up with a mother and dad who were Christians. We went to church, had brothers and sisters who were Christian, but not everybody has that. And then there are people here who work in an environment where everybody's ungodly. I worked at Gulf Oil Refinery. It was a great job, but I was a young man. And so when I was in the labor force, one of my jobs was to go in the offices where the operators were, had all these dials on the wall, and clean, you know, mop, empty garbage cans or whatever. Then later I actually worked in one of those offices. It may not allow that today, but back then, all over the walls, they'd have these pinup pictures, these nearly naked girls. And while they were supposed to be reading the dials, they'd be reading these dirty books. And you can imagine the language and the stories they told. Ungodly place to work. What are you going to do? I don't know. I'm trying to think if when I worked there, if I ever worked among another dedicated Christian. I don't know that I did. Anyway, many here face that, but you're here tonight. You were here this morning. You're serving God. And you know what? It's good for me to know that. But you know, we don't know our brethren because we don't associate with them. We don't know what they've faced. But if we meet with them, have a meal with them, have a cup of coffee with them, invite them in your home, and just talk about these things, you may learn some things about those people that are sitting on the pew here tonight that will lift your spirits. That you say, you know, I don't have it so bad. And boy, I appreciate those folks for what they've faced and what they've went through. That's not my plan, folks. I didn't write this. It's God's plan. And it's a plan that's designed to help us overcome the devil's effort to discourage us. You're familiar, you won't even have to turn there, Philippians 1:27. I use it so much, I know you remember it. Striving together for the faith of the gospel. It's the idea of teamwork. Josh, you're a coach. Suppose now you're getting ready to coach soccer again, right? So I've seen you out there on the field, and before y'all start, you get all the boys together, and y'all rooting, hollering, hold one another's hands. And what if one or two of the guys said, I don't want any part of that. I'm going to sit over here on the desk. Would that bother you? Would you say something to them? So I'm just going to get over here with Joe. I don't want to get with everybody else. And what would that do for the team? Why are they over there? Why don't they join us? What would that do for the team? Those of you that watch baseball, you know, one of the things that if you watch baseball, you know that there are different kind of clubhouses. There's clubhouses where there's animosity and disagreement, conflict. There's others that the guys get along good. And so we're a team striving together. That's what Philippians 1 says. So do you not want to know about your other team members? Do you not want to join with them in the joys and in the sorrows? You know, if you lose the game, what do? Josh, you say, y'all go home? Do you still get them together? Yes, sir, you do. You do. Teamwork. Again, this is not my plan, folks. It's here. The Holy Spirit had this left for us. Look at Romans chapter 16. Once you turn there, Hold your finger at both places. Go to Acts 20. In Acts chapter 20, in verse 2, it says, when he had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. You may have a little footnote in your Bible there about what Paul did there. Any of you have a footnote about what Paul did while he's in Greece? One you wrote. Huh? He wrote Romans. He wrote Romans. What had just happened to Paul? Previous chapter. What had happened? A riot in Ephesus. They wanted to kill him. He had to leave town. He gets to Greece and he writes this letter. Look at Romans chapter 16. So here's all these difficulties he's faced. What's on his heart? Here's a letter, a great, great letter. First 11 chapters, he's talking about God's grace that we talked about this morning. Saved by grace through faith. We read some of Romans this morning. But look what the last chapter is about. Paul is thinking about and being comforted by faithful brethren. In chapter 16, he starts off talking about Phoebe. And then when you get to verse 3, he talks about Prisca and Aquila. And verse 5 of it, Epaphroditus and so forth. If I've counted correctly, in this chapter, he talks about 29 individuals. And 10 of them are women. He knew their names. We've got, 36 tonight? Do you know the names of 36 people? Anything about their lives? 29. This is people in other places. We're here together. We worship together every week. Why do we even dwell on this? Because it's a hedge against discouragement. God's plan. Get to know one another and appreciate one another. Let me stop right here. Maybe you have some thoughts. We said that we'd welcome comments. Does any of you want to relate to the class, circumstances like where you've been discouraged and these kind of things, knowing about people or that kind of thing has encouraged you? I ain't about to talk. Okay, Craig, speak up.
I'll try.
This guy up here is kind of hard of hearing.
When I give motivational speeches at work, one of the things I encourage people to try to do is put aside the weight that encumbers themselves and serve somebody that needs help.
Good.
Because that's the prescription that Paul gives and that we see that God gives to people that are facing a temptation of sin. You do something well, you do something that's good, and you help somebody else, then you'll be encouraged by that, and you'll strengthen yourself, and you'll forget about some of the troubles that you have. And we'll go
over. Excellent advice. Thank you for sharing that, Craig. So for the recording, he said it worked. He tries to give motivational speeches, and one of the things he'll tell people is, instead of dwelling on the problems you're facing, find somebody that needs some help and help them. Get involved in helping somebody else. It'll get you focus off your difficulties. And you'll probably be encouraged when you get, you know, a good response from someone. So that's great. That's in a work environment. And why not in a spiritual environment? Same thing. Look around. Who might need some encouragement? Who might, because of family issues or job issues or health issues, might need some encouragement? What can I do to lift their spirits? And it keeps us from thinking about poor little me. I'm going to go hide in a cave. That kind of thing. Anybody else have some comments?
People here have experienced this. have even with 36. I consider that a large number compared to some. When we were in New Jersey, we had 20 people. And so, and there weren't churches, there weren't any churches immediately nearby. There were a couple of churches in New Jersey. And so you spent just about every weekend with somebody. Because these were your brethren. How do you get encouraged? How do you avoid being discouraged?
Can y'all hear that? All right, good.
And so, you know, depending upon your brethren in circumstances like that, is one of the things that keep you up, keep you just losing your faith. Because you're serving all alone, you say, oh no, woe is me. Each person there was that way in that environment. And you had some people that had a lot worse circumstances than Linda and I had as far as a personal life. Everything you're talking about, mates that were unfaithful, mates that were not only unfaithful, but counterproductive to them. It was a rich experience, even though you'd like to have had more people be involved. Still a rich experience with that number.
Appreciate those comments. That's exactly the God's plan, isn't it? And there are people that's meeting with just few. And I know when I think of the people here, and I know something about some of your struggles over the years, you probably don't realize how it's encouraging to my wife and I to see you continue to serve the Lord in spite of that. And very encouraging to us. Anybody else before I move on? I saw a hand back here.
Steve,
yes, sir.
You know, when we travel, we always look forward to serving, being with brethren in other places. As many of you know, we traveled with George Penn Ware a lot, and we went to a church in Burlington, Vermont, and hoping that, you know, we would be encouraged. When we showed up, there were three people there. They were very encouraged.
Very good point. Traveling, you can encourage brethren by just being there. I don't know if it's the same church, Jeff. I know we drove over the mountain. We were in Vermont together. Found this church. I don't remember how many people were there that day. Maybe 20. Same thing. Maybe half a dozen of them were the regulars. When they partook of the Lord's Supper, they just stood around the table. There was that few.
Same one.
Same one? You think what it means to those people, for people traveling to come and worship with them. But we take it for granted. We do it every week. But your presence, just you're here and putting up with me and encouraging your brethren. That's encouragement. I appreciate that, Jeff. Did somebody over here have a... That's a good point. You know, these preachers we support, we put out the reports. I don't know how many people read them. Two things can happen. Linda mentioned that. One, we can be encouraged to see those guys in such difficult circumstances trying to preach the gospel with just a handful of people. But, and I don't do as good as this as I ought to, is writing them. Write them a note back. Email them something. Some people write letters. I think that's something people used to do about 100 years ago. But you can write letters, whatever. And that's a good point, that we can be an encouragement, that they can know there's people several thousand miles away that appreciate what I'm doing. It's not just a matter of sending money. They are involved in the work I am. Yes, sir. Wayne?
There's a concept called missing pile syndrome, right? So think about like your floating ceilings that have all the white tiles in it, right? So some of them are either missing or maybe like a stained tile in there. So out of a room full of those tiles, hundreds of them in there, right? If one's missing, what are you focusing on? It's the one that's missing, right? You're not worried about the hundred of them that are there. Relating that to us, right? Think about the song, Count Your Many Blessings. You know, when upon life's billows your tempest tossed, thinking your scourge, thinking all is lost, right? Count your many blessings. So you may be focused on that one problem, those things in your life that aren't right, just like that one tile, whether it's missing or stained or something like that. But are you really focused? Well, you should be focusing on all the things that are going right, right? So back to Joseph, right? He's in prison. Not the best situation. What could he be thankful for, right? And he was thankful for a lot of things. So it's easy to get to that point, focusing on the wrong and the bad things in life, but there are so many more good things to focus on.
That's a great analogy. I hope I remember it. I'll use it someday if I remember it. Floating tile. What is floating tile? What?
Missing tile syndrome.
Missing tile
syndrome.
Syndrome. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that is true. You know, you look at the church, maybe there's one or two people that are very discouraging to you, and you can get to where you're focused on that instead of look at all the others serving God. Aren't you thankful? That's a good analogy. You may have seen this done. Years ago, I saw it somewhere, and I've tried it. It works. You take a white sheet of paper, and you take a black magic marker, and you put three big old black dots on it. You ask somebody, what do you see? They say, three black dots. Oh, you don't see all the white paper? And that's the way we are. It's the very thing Wayne's talking about. So, yeah, people are going to disappoint you. The preacher's going to disappoint you at times. But we're working together. And we can find mutual encouragement. I didn't even get to my second point. Want to discuss another thing that Holy Spirit gave can be so very encouraging, facing problems that we all face. Anyway, I appreciate you being here. If you think it'd be helpful and interesting to you to pursue further study along this line, please let me know. And if I have at least a few that find it interesting, maybe profitable, we'll use another one of our 5 p.m. sessions to continue along this line. There's some more examples that we can look at, and there's some principles about attitudes and stuff that the Holy Spirit has put in here. God knows us, and He knows our weaknesses to try to help us overcome this thing that the devil uses to try to discourage us from serving God. So your very presence here has been encouraging to me tonight, and I trust to everyone else who's been present this evening.
Steve,
yes.
One thing I was thinking, Jeff, you can correct me, but one time I was stopping at Glenroy, and I had a question or something, and he heard me saying, I said, oh, I don't want to bother you, coach. You suffer so much. And Glenn says, no, you help me. It makes me realize.
Okay.
That's my problem for a little bit.
Did you hear that, Glenn?
Don't ever hesitate to ask somebody, coach. You think
you're Jeff, though, aren't you?
Jeff, was I right? Was that right when your daddy said that?
Oh, his daddy'd say that, I guarantee you. I tell you what, Glenn, you know, Glenn was a hard-working man. He'd get up, I don't know what, 3:30 in the morning, get those mowers ready to go do commercial mowing. Hard-working man. And then, of course, he began to have health issues. Had the problem with his shoulder and the problem with his circulatory system and all that. And Glenn continued as best he could to serve as an elder. And there would be times I'd call Glenn. I said, we need to have a visit with somebody tonight. Now, Glenn is taking morphine for pain. He said, okay. And he would time his medicine so it would take care of the pain and he could go visit with me at night. That's Glenn. That's right. He'd do that. It's not, oh, man, I'm hurting. Don't bother me. No. Glenn both loved people. He loved people. And he was the kind of guy, don't try to fool him. He can read right through you. He was that kind of guy. But so here he is. He's past and gone, but he's still encouraging people. And so that's great. Thank you, Melanie, for that. Yes, sir.
I think it's encouraging to hear curious about young men or women of any age who come to their senses and want to obey the gospel even though they're out of town, and they call up the local preacher and they want to get baptized, and they get baptized and then they come worship with
you. Know somebody like that? Yeah, I know somebody like that, and he's here tonight. That's right, Josh.
It's encouraging to hear stories about people converting.
You bet. It really is. And you know, Daryl, his cousin, way up in Tyler, was the one that was studying with him. But he loved his soul, wanted to teach him the truth. Daryl had a good heart. Here he is tonight. Thank you so much for all your comments. Josh is going to lead us in the song, and after he leads us in that song, Doug's going to lead us in a final prayer. Okay, Josh.